Now, back to a couple of guys that think Dr. Doolittle was a quack. It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
It's 9:35 and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a first-time guest on the line, Dr. Degner, who is with the Michigan Veterinary Specialists, and he is a board-certified veterinary surgeon. Welcome to the show, Dr. Degner.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Doctor, can you explain for our audience exactly what it is that you do?
Sure. Basically, what I do, along with the other specialists in our hospital, is we deal with cases that typically the primary care veterinarian does not feel comfortable dealing with. So usually it's a special problem that a pet may have. And there's a whole host of them that we deal with. I deal with surgical problems. So a lot of my cases that come through are going to be pets that have, for example, lameness. The dog is limping on a limb. And perhaps the primary care vet has already diagnosed what the problem is, but they don't have the capability or the equipment or the whatever it might be, the facility to do the specialized surgery. And so they get the case referred to me. And the most common type of problem I deal with is ACL tears or cruciate ligament tears. And it is actually far more common in dogs than it is in humans.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. In fact, we see in the United States roughly 600,000 dogs that have surgery for this problem, and that certainly is an underestimation for what typically is out there, because some people don't have their pets treated.
Right.
Right.
And when you hear about it from humans, a lot of times you hear it from athletes who will have those types of injuries. And a lot of time it's from running and doing athletic things. I would imagine that's what's causing it to happen in pets as well, correct?
Well, that may play a factor. But with this particular problem, we believe that there are other problems, perhaps anatomical problems. We know that as a pet ages, there's age-related degeneration of the ligament. We also know that in some pets, they have an immune type of disorder in which the body starts to weaken that ligament due to the immune system. And so there's a variety of factors that may play a role in it. And previously, of course, everyone thought it's just due to trauma. The dog twists the leg. In fact, the layman's term for cruciate ligament tear is called squirrel leg, because the dog chases after the squirrel and bam, blows out the knee, and then we see the dog. So, but that is really a common scenario where the dog chases the squirrel and blows it out. But in reality, that ligament has been gradually tearing over time, gradually degenerating and becoming weakened until it's sort of like the last straw. Bang, bam, it goes, and we have a full-blown cruciate tear.
And is this something that the veterinarian that we would take our animals to would have an easy or difficult time actually identifying?
For the most part, the primary care vets are able to diagnose this problem. The difficulty is when these dogs present in the earlier stages of the problem, when we have the so-called partial tear of the cruciate ligament, because then you do not feel the instability of the knee. It feels tight. But there are some subtle signs that we can pick up, and especially those people that are doing a lot of orthopedics, you can pick up those subtle signs and say, yeah, this dog is in the early stage of a cruciate tear.
And would the average person just simply, is there things that, if I know I exercise my dog a lot and I see him coming up lame, are there things that would direct me to my family veterinarian, or would there be situations where we'd want to just give you a call directly?
Typically, the first option is to go to your primary care veterinarian, because we deal with referrals from them.
I get you.
So usually you'll go to your primary care vet. They'll check everything out, make sure it's not just a simple problem that can be dealt with, perhaps with an anti-inflammatory. And if they feel it's something that is more serious, then they'll send the case over to us.
And I noticed Dysplasia is a very, you know, active part of your practice as well. Can we talk a little bit about that?
About hip dysplasia?
Yeah.
Sure. Hip dysplasia is very common. It's very prevalent in dogs. And in fact, there are a lot of dogs out there that don't even show clinical signs of their hip dysplasia. Hip dysplasia, by definition, is the abnormal development of the hip, where the socket is not fitting properly together with the ball of the hip. And as a result, we have some looseness. And subsequently to this looseness of the hip, we get degenerative changes. We get arthritis. And that can cause pain in a pet. Mm-hmm. And if your pet does have signs of lameness, then that's one of the things that we're going to consider. With hip dysplasia, we don't treat the x-rays. That is, if we take an x-ray of the hips, we see that there's hip dysplasia, but the dog doesn't have any clinical signs, we're not going to recommend a hip replacement
mm-hmm.
or any of the other treatment modalities that we have for that.
Just observe it.
Right. Now, the other thing that you should be aware of is I see quite a few dogs that are referred for hip dysplasia, but in reality, the clinical problem is a torn ACL.
Gotcha.
So the hip dysplasia, I find frequently, is a secondary issue. It is not a major clinical issue. Or the other thing that we commonly will see is a dog that has a lower back problem, a slip disc in the back. The disc is causing some impingement upon the nerve that is going to the back leg. That causes pain. The dog perceives it as pain in the back leg, so the dog will be limping on that limb.
Mm-hmm.
So with hip dysplasia, you have to be a little bit careful and select your cases appropriately, because if you just treat hip dysplasia surgically and there's another problem, the dog is going to continue to have lameness. One study actually had found that of the dogs that have hip dysplasia, only about 15% of them actually need surgical treatment.
Very interesting. You know, we see a lot of x-rayed, when people are looking to buy dog breeds that have that particular problem, you see x-rays as being the signature key to look into that. How prevalent is the actual problem, genetically speaking? It almost seems like it's a conversation among every dog breed, or maybe not. It just seems that way. There's probably a percentage of dog breeds that don't have the problem and others that do, though. It is genetic,
right?
Correct?
It definitely is genetic. And the problem certainly can be screened with x-rays, but the problem with the traditional x-ray is that we can miss cases. And that is because we x-ray the pets at too young of an age. And that is called the OFA x-ray. And it's just a plain x-ray in which we extend the legs, have a look at the hips. But there's another test that can be done. It's called the pen hip x-ray. And that is more sensitive in detecting dogs that have hip dysplasia. This particular x-ray involves distracting the hips apart gently with an instrument, a device called a distractor. And then we take an x-ray, we evaluate the looseness of the hip. And that certainly can be very helpful in identifying dogs that are genetically affected by hip dysplasia. The other benefit of the pen hip x-ray is that if we do it at 4 months of age, we can identify a dog that is going to develop hip dysplasia, and we can do a very simple procedure called the juvenile pubic symphysiodesis. And basically what that involves is cauterizing one of the growth plates of the pelvis through a relatively small incision. And the pelvis thereby is not going to grow from that area, yet the rest of the pelvis is going to grow. And what it does is it tips the cups of the hips over the balls of the femur. So in essence, that cup is going to capture the head of the femur, and it's going to keep it nice and snug in the bone. And that is a process, because as a dog grows, that's going to gradually tip and correct the problem of hip dysplasia.
And how prevalent is the problem? I mean, if I'm thinking about wanting to get a dog, how important it is to get x-rays? Or is there certain breeds that I should just automatically do it? Or are there other breeds that it's pretty much a low risk? Or is it
right?
Just, you know,
well, we have two ends of the spectrum. In general, the greyhounds are very immune to hip dysplasia. Now, if we go on the other end of the spectrum, we can see Labradors and German Shepherds and Rottweilers, Bernese Mountain Dogs, Great Danes. These dogs are certainly much more susceptible to having that kind of problem. And if you are going to purchase a pet, I would check with the breeder, make sure that they have followed through with x-rays. Ideally, the pen hip, but at least the OFA x-rays, to make sure not only that the parents have great hips, but also grandparents and down the line. So it's important to follow through with that. Just taking an x-ray of the hip, it may not show a problem when you buy that puppy, because the puppy is going to be, you know, a few months of age.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that change until later on. Once you're emotionally attached.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and one of the reasons that's an issue, Rick and I have interviewed a few people from pet insurance companies, and it seems that one of the issues that they don't typically insure against is hip dysplasia. How much does that enter into the treatment and how people respond when these issues start to come to the fore?
Right. It definitely does play a role because treatments for hip dysplasia are by no means inexpensive, especially when we need to have a surgery done, such as a total hip replacement. Certainly, if we do the juvenile pubic symphysiodesis, that is a much less expensive type of procedure, and it puts the dog through pretty minimal discomfort after surgery.
Right. It's a fascinating topic. Doctor, if we can, I'd like to take a break with you real quickly and bring you back after the break. And what I'd like to talk with you about is how much of a lot of the issues you're dealing with, how much of that is being caused by issues related to weight and other factors like that. So that's the conversation where we're going to go right after the break here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com. Because everything is never as it seems. Because I get 1,000 hugs from 10,000 light.